Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakravarti.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We're going to talk now about what could be considered the ultimate eating disorder.
It has to do with young women who have type 1 diabetes, and it's called diabulimia. Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog, reported on this recently, and she's here with us. Hi, Carrie. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Meghna.
So explain to me in a little bit more detail, what is diabulimia?
Diabulimia, the name comes from the combination of diabetes, in this case type 1 diabetes, not the kind that comes from obesity.
Also known as what? Juvenile onset diabetes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And bulimia, which everyone's familiar with as an eating disorder, in which normally the people who have it binge and then purge. They vomit up the food that they've eaten. So the reason that those two words are put together is that this is a syndrome. It's not actually an official diagnosis or a medically recognized term, but it's a phenomenon that's become more and more recognized in the last few years. So in this syndrome, people, usually young women, who have type 1 diabetes may binge on a lot of food, and then instead of like a typical bulimic throwing it back up, they allow their blood sugar to become very, very high. So they skip or they restrict the insulin that they should be taking. When your blood sugar gets very, very high and you're not taking the insulin, that means that insulin would allow your blood sugar to get into your tissues where it's supposed to go so that its energy can be used. But instead, it's stuck in your blood where it becomes toxic and sort of acidic. And that causes you to become severely dehydrated. So you're extra urinating. You may be vomiting. You become very dehydrated. And so all of these fluids, along with fat and tissue and so on, are coming out of your body because your chemistry is basically just going crazy.
This is putting their lives at risk.
That's right. And letting your blood sugar get too high can indeed cause a life-threatening medical crisis. And that's why in the post I wrote that this may be sort of like the ultimate eating disorder, because it takes to the extreme that harsh logic of an eating disorder, which is that you are so concerned with getting thin that you stop thinking about your health.
Okay, Carrie, yes. So in your post, you spoke with a woman named Mary Jean Hunt. She's author of the new memoir, Eating to Lose, a book where she's written about her own struggle with diabulimia. And Mary Jean Hunt is here with us now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much.
So let me ask you, when were you first diagnosed with type 1 diabetes? How old were you?
I was 10 years old. It was 1971. Before it was diagnosed, I obviously had some of the symptoms of high blood sugar. Mm-hmm. And they kept getting worse and worse and worse. Mm-hmm.
So you were 10 years old.
I was 10.
You got an official type 1 diabetes diagnosis.
Exactly.
And I presume that you were given a regimen of insulin.
A regimen of insulin and a regimen of dieting. And there's a hyper-focus on food after an initial diagnosis with diabetes.
Okay. How old were you when you developed diabulimia?
Around age 14, when I started to enter puberty, started to gain a few pounds, and you know, that sort of conflicted with cultural, I want to say, infatuation with skinny. And so at that point, I wanted to go on a diet, and I started with dieting, but dieting wasn't working. And as you know, you want immediate gratification for your efforts.
And in fact, it's been found that having type 1 diabetes tends to make people more prone to having an eating disorder. You can speculate that it may be because the diabetes requires a very tight focus on food, and that could lay the groundwork for an obsession with food.
Right. So, I mean, so much of your life is organized around food regulation.
Well, food obsession. Is almost mandatory at the beginning.
Well, let me ask you, at what point in your mind did it click that you had insulin, which could potentially be used as a tool to regulate your weight?
Well, I actually sort of stumbled into it, I think. After unsuccessful dieting, I think at that point I nibbled on something and it made my sugar go high. And then lo and behold, the next day I woke up and I was a couple pounds less. And I thought, oh, yeah, that's right.
You were a couple pounds less the next day.
Yeah, because my blood sugar went high. So I must have developed what they call ketones. Ketones are actually the particular toxin in your blood that is responsible for the sudden weight loss.
So when you would restrict or stop taking your insulin, what did that feel like in the hours or the day afterward? How did it make your body feel?
It's not immediate. It's not generally in the first hour. You might start to get a little bit thirsty, full, maybe a little nauseous. It's usually a few hours later. The symptoms start to escalate a little bit and intensify. Then you sit with it a little bit longer and you become lethargic and exhausted and unclear-headed. You know, it's much different than inadequate sleep.
But during this time, when you're experiencing these terrible symptoms, I mean, were you losing weight?
You're probably not losing them until after you sleep. Okay. For some strange reason, I think the blood sugars tend to go even higher when you sleep. And then you wake up the next day and you've peed out and you've totally depleted your body. And your tissues start to break down, your muscle tissue starts to break down, and you become dehydrated, so you lose a lot of weight that way.
How long did you do this for?
22 years. So all of that, I might lose weight pretty quickly, but I sure gained it pretty quickly, too.
Mary Jean, I have to ask, 22 years, did it ever occur to you that you were doing something that risked your life?
Always.
And why did
you keep
doing it?
Well, people start smoking, too, and they know, they've heard of lung cancer, and they still smoke. Because when you want something badly enough, and that something I wanted was the image that lived in my head.
That magazine perfect
woman. That's right. Exactly.
And Meghna, I would add, I spoke with an expert at the Joslin Diabetes Center, Anne Gobel-Fabry, who actually researches diabulimia and treats patients with it. And she points out that there's a very typical problem, which is that the risks are somewhere undefined down the road. And in fact, Anne Gobel-Fabry has done some research that found that if you have diabulimia as a young woman with type 1 diabetes, you triple your chances of dying prematurely from the disease. But again, that's years and years away, and you're a young woman who wants to look good right now, and
right.
So you take these risks.
Ask a teenager to think about something 10 or 20 years later.
Exactly.
Not possible.
Exactly.
So how did you finally get diagnosed that you were suffering from diabulimia on top of your type 1 diabetes?
It was after confessing to my doctor. But what happened, what really made me confess to my doctor what I was doing is having children. I knew I didn't want to perpetuate anything unhealthy in them.
Mary Jean could not have gotten the formal diagnosis of diabulimia because it didn't exist. It still actually
right.
is not a formal diagnosis.
And diabulimia, just to be clear, what it's come to mean, even though it's not a medical diagnosis, it's any eating disorder in combination with type 1 diabetes.
I see.
So it's the marriage of those two illnesses.
Eating disorders in and of themselves are sometimes tragically difficult to treat because
right.
so much of it involves, a person's state of mind.
Right. And also not focusing on food.
Right.
And so you put an eating disorder where the focus treatment is to not focus on food.
But you still
and
have to
diabetes,
focus on food. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have to focus on food. So they're mutually exclusive.
So how were you treated for diabulimia then?
A team. I had a therapist who specialized in eating disorders with diabetes. I had my diabetes doctor. I did see a nutritionist, but not more than once, because I had a pretty good understanding of nutrition.
So Carrie, there are many millions of people who have type 1 diabetes in
right.
America. So, I mean, how prevalent is diabulimia?
Well, it's estimated at more than a million. And we also know that among, I believe it's young women with type 1 diabetes, an estimated one-third do at some point restrict mm-hmm. or omit their insulin. So this is a growing phenomenon.
Yeah.
So since we're on the radio, people can't see. So I'm just going to say, you look great.
Oh, thank you.
You look fantastic today.
Thank you.
I mean, do you have the diabulimia under control? I mean,
it's
are you
more than
free
under
of
control.
It?
I know for a fact I will never, ever do it again.
Yeah.
You know, you can look in the mirror and say, oh, yeah, I got a little pocket of fat over here. And to me now, that doesn't look so tragic. It looks like a little pocket of stored up energy that is there for me if I need it.
Since you've been through this yourself, if you were speaking to a young woman, a girl who'd been given the type 1 diabetes diagnosis, what would you tell them?
Look at all the things your body is capable of giving you. you are exactly what you're supposed to be. If you are healthy, eating, making good choices most of the time, not even all the time, and be active most of the time, and you're going to be exactly what you're supposed to be.
Mary Jean Hunt is the author of the new memoir, Eating to Lose. Thank you so much for coming in today. It was really a pleasure to be able to speak with you.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
And Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health Blog. Always great to have you. You bring the greatest stories to us here at Radio Boston. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Megan.
And you can read Carrie's original post about diabulimia at commonhealth.wbur.org.
And still to come on our program, our Farm to Fork series with Chef Andy Husbands on the goodness of hydroponically grown vegetables. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.